She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
Let's talk about the tiny pregnant woman.
That was not some random hookup baby.
I know, we're off track, but I have questions about that.
What did the shark dick look like? Are you a marine biologist / pediatrician, or like...
I'm gonna become famous. I'm gonna be big in theater. I'm gonna get on Broadway.
What is up, bestie? How are you today?
Hello, bestie. Aren't you so excited to talk about this book?
I am so pumped here. We have read this book together and we picked it out and it was so awesome. And I'm so excited to be here and share this time with you.
I know, the way that we do all the time on every episode, every time.
Week we meet like this and do this. So, yeah.
Definitely, for sure. Yeah. This is not the first time we are speaking to each other.
Never. Yeah.
No.
Not across the internet. Not me, like, losing it and fangirling and doing all the things. We're best friends.
No.
So. You're not Molly, okay, so... and I'm not April.
I am Francesca Zappia, the author.
And I am Nurse Katie, and this is your April Fool's episode of The Besties.
Hello! Welcome!
Very, very excited to be here. Molly and April messaged me, it's been a while ago, and they were like, hey, what are you doing in April? And I'm like, you know, live, laugh, love. And they're like, do you want to film with Chezzy? And I was like, oh my God. Because, like, I am a huge fan of yours. Like, I think I have all but maybe one of your books on my shelves. Eliza is like one of my favorites, and my oldest daughter has anxiety and things, and we always say, like, how's your monster? Like, are you controlling the monster, or is the monster controlling you? So
that
book I just love, and then Made You Up I love so much. That was actually the first one I read. I was so excited when they said that. And so I'm like completely fangirling to get to you and hang out with you for this time. So very excited.
I'm so happy. They contacted me and they're like, hey, you want to come on beyond an episode? And I was like, yeah, always. Duh.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, how about a little April Fool's episode with Nurse Katie? And I was like, yes. Get to have that fun time. So yeah, here we are. And the book we're talking about is Shark Heart by Emily Habeck. I assume how you pronounce her last name.
Loving the
cover. I also have it here. It's a beautiful cover.
Yep.
I love the shark on it. I love
about the flowers, how they're drawn and how it like how you said they were like really representative of the whole story, like how the flowers are so pretty and everything.
Yes. Obviously the shark and the flowers and just kind of the cover as a whole. So let's just get into it, I guess. I'll go ahead and read the synopsis here.
Please.
Yeah. In Emily Habeck's debut novel, Shark Heart, newlyweds Ren and Lewis experience a harrowing and heartbreaking first and only year of marriage when they discover Lewis is turning into a great white shark. Lewis grapples with a degenerative illness and the slow loss of his theater dreams. Ren cares for him while struggling with memories of grief. And woven between them is the story of Ren's mother, Angela, and how loss and generational trauma shape all of us, not always for the worse. Do you think I got it there? This one is really interesting to summarize. Yeah.
So good. So good. Doesn't give any spoilers away, but totally sets the stage. So... So this is Emily Habeck's debut novel, and like, where did this girl come from? Like, so good. Definitely something I was not expecting. Debut author, very, very strong. Will you read more from her, you think? I definitely will.
I think I definitely will. This might bleed into our second question a little bit, but like sometimes you read a book by a debut author and you're like, oh man, they've got it. Like right out the gate, they've got it. And this one was like,
you know,
what? Well, just saying. You know, I can't. I'm not allowed to say it about myself. I like this book at first initially, because like, okay, so when we picked this book, I read the synopsis and I was like, I am always down for weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Like turning into a great white shark, I'm there. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Here for it. Like, I know this is, it's probably going to veer literary and it's going to be some kind of like large metaphor. Mm-hmm. Love it. And it definitely did. It was that. And I think, like, again, like I said, to go in a little bit into the second question, like my, when I first started reading this, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Like this has some things that aren't really for me, like the theater stuff and the, mm-hmm. some of the characterizations. I was like, I don't know if this book is going to be for me. And yeah. Then as I got farther into it, it was like the writing style and mm-hmm. the turns that the plot took and a lot of the other characters that we got into. I was like, man, this just hits really hard.
Right. Yeah. I agree. When Molly first said she read it, it was like, just, you know, if you should be in the group chat, because sometimes you're like, I don't speak Molly as clearly as I thought I did. Some days you speak Molly real clear, and some days you're like, I got nothing, boo. I got nothing. So when she sent that, we were all just kind of like, what the actual fuck, Molly? It was very confusing. So then I got on Goodreads and I was like, oh, okay, she's not like Stony Baloney. She like is actually reading this really good literary book about it. So I thought, what the hell? Like out of the list that they had sent us, I thought, yeah, we'll read this one. It looks good. And I just was really, really blown away by this. I just want to like pick her brain and be like, where did this inspiration come from for you? Like, what was going on in your world that this is the story you had to tell? Like, and so beautifully written on top of it, but then just like, where did this even come from? Like,
yeah.
Oh, it'd be so interesting.
And like, speaking of how beautifully written it was, like, again, in the beginning, I was like, ooh, is this going to be too pretentious for me? Is this going to be, you know, but it smooths out in a way that like, by not even halfway through, and then the rest of the book, I was getting such big Emily St. John Mandel vibes off of it, of like, the kind of yearning for what has come before, and like the fear of the future, but also hope, and like, I love that. I love that kind of thing.
So good. Yeah.
Yes. It's amazing.
So, how do you feel like your initial reaction then now after you've read this whole book? Do you feel like, okay, yeah, like if you told people, hey, you should read this book about this guy that turns into a shark? No, really? Like, trust me. Like, that's kind of how I feel like I explain it to people now. Like, I'll be like, oh, it's about this guy that turns into a shark. But like, I know how that sounds. Like, so do you feel like you're explaining to people when you've read it, like, no, there's like so much more? So,
yeah. Being the author who had to explain Katzenjammer to people, well, I feel like I have a little bit of experience.
A little bit of practice.
I can't explain that book either. Right. But it is a book that I have been thinking about since I finished it. Uh-huh. And so when I explain it to people, it's like you almost don't even start with the shark thing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a book about grief and illness and loss and like mm-hmm. moving on, told through the lens of a guy turning into a shark
and his love of theater. Like, it's it's so,
and like creativity and art and and wonder with the world. And like, it's so, it really is that thing of like, you have to set, if you're trying to get somebody else to read this book, you have to set it up in a way of like, look, this is what the book is about. You are going to read a story of a man turning into a great white shark, mm-hmm. but like, this is what you're reading about, because a lot of people read like surface level, or they hear mm-hmm. the surface level and they don't, you know, they just haven't been trained to wonder what that means.
Yeah.
And I think this is a way to do it that like, really brings to the surface the how scary degenerative illnesses are, and like like how scary it is for the person going through it and also their family members, right. And like, and does it in a way that like will make people go, whoa, what's this book about? Guy right, turning yeah. into shark?
Yeah.
Which just but makes it like, oh, just a really.
Yeah. It's yeah. like, yeah.
And it's just like a really interesting hook.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, kind of into the next question, like my, because I work in with cancer patients, my brain's automatically like, oh, this is cancer. Like these, you know, yeah. he knew when he got that diagnosis that this was going to be his end game. So I know there are certain diagnoses that I see that it's end game, like that we know this is going to be your detriment and it's going to be a short kind of thing. And like you had said, it could be more of like dementia and things like that, mm-hmm. that it's a kind of a slow progression. And I think that's really interesting take on it. And then also kind of, you had talked about like how Tiny Pregnant Woman, like that whole storyline with the mutations and like what that would look like, you know, being pregnant with children that you knew would be, have a major variance or something like that. So what are your thoughts? Like, just tell me what you're thinking about that more. I just want to listen to you talk.
Yeah. 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 Oh man. Somebody telling me they want me to talk. This is like the worst day for me. No, I, cause I also did immediately think like, okay, this is a cancer metaphor
yeah.
because yeah. so many people are affected by cancer. I don't know a single person in my life who hasn't been affected by cancer in one way or yep. another.
Yeah.
And it's just so like, fuck cancer, first of all.
Amen. No, like, respectfully, just fuck cancer. Yeah.
Fuck cancer. Yep. And like, I wondered, there was a minute where I wondered like, okay, books, stories have always done this, right? Where they take something that's real and they put a fantastical
mm-hmm.
Lens over it or skin over it
yeah.
to kind of like talk about it in the abstract a little bit.
Fairy tales, prime example. Like this is fairy how you tales in life, but we're gonna make it pretty and shiny and put glass slippers on it. So yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And as I was reading this book, I was sitting there going, especially in the beginning, I was going, okay, what is the purpose of making this a story about these animal mutations mm-hmm. versus just making it a cancer story?
Right. Yeah.
And as the story went on and we see like Angela's mother and the tiny pregnant woman, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, hold on. This isn't just cancer, because the tiny pregnant woman's babies are birds inside right. of her.
Yeah.
And it's a pregnancy that is probably going to kill her.
Right.
And Angela's mother, that one could have also been cancer, but like the way it was spoken about and the way that she forgot things and
yeah.
got very violent and things like that, which Lewis also did, but that felt more to me like dementia or mm-hmm. an illness
Alzheimer's.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alzheimer's. Exactly. And so like I was reading through the book and again, I asked the question like, okay, what are we gaining or losing by doing this to what felt like every disease? Like, I don't mm-hmm. think we really heard about diseases that weren't people turning into animals.
Right. There was no other, like they didn't talk about somebody yeah. dying from cancer. Like it was all, and like even the medical world within this world was set up to address these mutations. Like they had the buildings yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for the further he progressed. And there was people who had studied it. And there was a nurse that like, Ren was able to call when he was getting real violent, like all of those parts and pieces were in place. So it was like this whole world, this was the norm for
yes.
it. Yeah.
Which I think was actually the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if she had put in the real illnesses, it would yeah. have been weird.
Yeah.
And like by the end of the book, I liked that it was kind of disambiguated from mm-hmm. cancer or dementia or Alzheimer's or, you know, anything like that. Did you feel like that at all? Was there any point where you were reading the book and you were like, I kind of wish this had more like real world, I don't even know what word I want to use, like real world
scenario,
like specificity yeah. to it.
No, I wanted, honestly, my nerd brain wanted to find more about like what the medical thing looked like. Like I wanted to know more about, like I wanted more of the healthcare delivery for these patients. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's what I wanted. But like the thinking of all the other diseases and stuff like that, I felt like this world was very, like it was well thought out to address these problems. So I wasn't wondering like, oh, well, don't they have cancer? Or, oh, don't they die of diabetes or other things too? Like nothing about her writing yeah. really wanted me to have that other part. And it yes. wasn't set in such a fantastic, like such a fantasy world that you couldn't just see this happening in every day too. Yes. That's what, like one thing I really liked about it was like, this could happen tomorrow. And mm-hmm. what would that look like kind of thing?
Right. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I saw some reviews that were like wanted more of those like details, but it was like, they wanted details that I was like, the book didn't invite you to ask those questions and mm-hmm. those answers weren't relevant to the purpose of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, like exactly. I want to learn all about what they do at these hospitals as people are changing, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's not important to Lewis's story. It's not important to Ren's right. story. It's just my nosiness. So yeah.
Right, right. I too was in that nerd yeah. space of like, yeah. but wait a minute. Tell me, I want to know more. Give me all the little details. But yeah, it was
a doctor, or how does this work? Are you a marine biologist right. / pediatrician? Or like
what is the schedule for like, do they have to take the animals out for exercise? Like right? where are we?
If you have a consciousness as a shark and you shit in the tank, do you feel the need to clean the shit as a human, or do you feel bad because another human is cleaning your shark shit? And
yeah.
like, that's where I was. But that's yes, also because yes. I need to up my meds. So yeah. Yeah. So, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So I am a relatively fast reader, and I was still able to tear through this book in a day. One, because I thought the story was so good, but then also because of the formatting. Mm-hmm. So very short paragraphs. She interjected like some stage scenes and things like that for Lewis's theater things. I would love to hear about that, because I am not a writer, like even a little bit, so I don't understand where that process comes from, and like what are your thoughts as a writer on her formatting like that. But then also I want to hear what you think about it as a reader too, like what your thoughts, because as a reader I loved it. I loved how it kept the pace of the story going. I loved the interjection of the, because I'm a theater nerd, my kids are theater nerds. So the theater part resonated with me because I could see, I've read scripts and I've seen scripts translate from script to stage.
Right.
So I really liked that component. So what are your thoughts on that?
So as a reader, I loved it because it did make the book like a lot quicker and a lot quicker to read. And those kind of like when authors do scripts or like, not epistolary novels, but like anything that's written in kind of an abbreviated format like that, where it's like dialogue, 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 dialogue. It's, it kind of makes the scene really punchy. Like mm-hmm. it really gives you, it worked in the, I loved the scenes that she chose for it, because it was like when they meet Lewis's parents and tell Lewis's yes. parents about it.
Yes.
It's like, it hits so hard because mm-hmm. it is like you are there in the room with them.
And it's like when you see a stage performance, and because we're theater nerds, we've seen several plays, several different productions wise, to see someone's interpretation of a play that you've seen 8 times, and if it's paired back real, and you're just like so much more emotion and other things come through it. Like, I loved seeing that, because then I thought, how would somebody else do that production? Like, what would that look like on another stage with another set of actors? So I really, really liked that. It was a beautiful scene. So
Yes. This was one of the things in the beginning of the book that I was like, oh no, is this book not going to be for me? Because I have enjoyed theater productions. I respect theater as an art form. It is typically not for me. It's not like my first choice of entertainment. And so when I was reading this, I was like, ooh, I don't know. And then, but as a reader, I really did like the scripted scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I loved was Lewis's, like, how he saw theater and how he felt about theater.
Yes.
That was one of my questions on here. He makes a point. Lewis makes a point about having a creative calling that doesn't love you back, and how it only takes from you, because he talks about, like, he went to New York as a young person and was like, I'm going to become famous. I'm going to be big in theater. I'm going to get on Broadway. And then it, like, time passed and he got older and it didn't happen and it didn't happen. And finally he kind of gave up and moved home and became a teacher. And
there's nothing wrong with that. Like, no, that's an amazing,
not at all.
That's an amazing thing. But then I felt like he was disappointed in himself. Like, oh, I'm settling. I'm going back home. I'm going to teach theater because I couldn't do it. Not that, like, that teaching was his calling. And so I think that, that definitely played into, like, for me, as I was reading it, like, a lot of his regrets and, like, how he was like, I wasn't able to do this. And now I have this illness and it is changing me permanently and fatally. And I'm not able to do what I thought was my pinnacle. Like, I was never successful. So,
see throughout the book, like, as he's changing, like, him kind of penduluming back and forth between,
oh, for sure,
like, I failed and no, I succeeded because I'm so proud of my students and the people that I am inspiring to go pursue their dreams. And maybe one of them will do what I couldn't.
Yeah.
And it is, like, that's such a real feeling of, like, that swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
And, like, when I read that line, I was like, man, that feels so real to, like, have something that you give so much of yourself to, and to have those times where it feels like it just only takes from you and does not give anything back.
Yeah.
But then you, like, you talk to one person that you influenced, or, you know, you see one thing that you did and you're like, you know what? I did accomplish something. Like, I didn't make an impact. I did change things.
Yeah. I've never had that on, like, a creative aspect. Like, I understand, and where, you know, like, for you and Molly as writers, like, you put a lot of work into that and you put a lot of yourself on those pages, and your family's taking back seats when your brain's on fire, and then to, like, pour all that out and have somebody be like, meh, or, like, have some ass, you know, be like, it sucks. And you're like, oh, cool, thanks. Like, I can't imagine, like, going through that as in, like, the theater that my husband and I have done was small town time productions. Like, we knew that it wasn't going to be our life's events, but even to have negative feedback on that was hard. So I can't imagine, like, having your whole life be wrapped up into your creative processes and have somebody be like, you suck. Cause I would be like, okay, I do suck and I'm going to go hide in the corner now. So.
Yeah. And it's like, I couldn't imagine, I mean, gosh, him, the book, like, him having this illness, like, getting cancer or some illness where it's like, okay, my life is on a timer now.
Mm-hmm.
And what have I done? Like, was any of it worth anything? Can I do anything to make my mark on the world? Or am I just going to be kind of swept away by time and the limit of the human memory?
Yep. One of our My kids are in band right now, and the drumline director, amazing guy, like absolutely amazing guy, teaches history, and like he's like the cool history teacher. Everybody loves him. He literally teaches a class called the History of Rock and Social Injustice in the Media. So like he's like the super cool teacher. Has MS and has not been doing well lately. And I think he sees himself not being able to do the things, and that's all he's seeing. And he's not seeing how many of these years of kids who think the world of him and think like what his impact has been to them and like what his class meant to them or what the time they spent him teaching them the drum lines and the cadences and stuff like that. And I think that's, you know, I feel like that's a lot of what Lewis was feeling too, because he didn't have a Tony Award winning Broadway show, but he didn't make an impact on those kids. Like, you know, theater's the marginalized kids. He definitely made an impact on those kids for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, can we talk about the tiny pregnant woman? Like,
that let's whole... talk about the let's talk about the tiny pregnant woman.
So sad. So, like, just the whole storyline. You know, she's this amazing swimmer. I don't think they said what caused her to stop swimming in it. Like,
it was like she was really good at. Oh gosh, it was that she was really good at it. But I think like. People expected her to only do that, or like she didn't like it that much or something like that. Like she didn't want that to be her thing.
Her name. So she quit. That's what it was. Yeah. She was like, there's more to me than just swimming. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And like, so she quit, and then she like tried like biking or something. Why do I feel like she tried something else? And then like something happened and the doctor was like, oh, you could try swimming because like your joints are bad. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And she was like, yeah, no thanks. Swimming is not for me. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then she went back and started doing it again. She was like, oh, this is really great. Actually, I like swimming when it's not.
Yeah.
When someone's not making me do it, or nobody expects me to do it.
And it's not competitive. Yeah. So that's
and it's not competitive.
I just like. The whole story, though, I wanted there to be a lot more of it, and I got super bummed, like, when that was just, like, the end of it with her and Ren. And then after, spoiler, Ren has a baby, like, she goes and looks her up and is, like, finds out that she dies during childbirth. And, like, how much of a gut punch would that be to Ren, who just interacted with this woman and then finds out about these babies and thought she was going to connect on this whole other level. Like, as a mother, that was a really hard scene for me to like not be able to connect with somebody because they died during childbirth. Like that would be super hard to deal with. So
yes, that like I for part of the time I wondered what the narrative purpose of the tiny pregnant woman was. Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps there are some things that I didn't pick up on as a reader. Mm-hmm. Because like obviously it was like a hey, you can find friends in grief, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yeah.
And like when the tiny bird woman realizes that or tiny pregnant woman realizes that Ren is not as like grief stricken, like she has some hope or she's like mm-hmm. things are looking up somehow, she cuts off their friendship.
Right. She's like, I don't want to deal with this. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And so like I was curious, like what is the purpose of the tiny pregnant woman in this story besides just a friend for Ren? Because that's not her only thing, because she does get her own backstory and her own kind of like sadness in her life.
Yeah.
And like, so, oh, was it, was it specifically that she wouldn't get an abortion because of her religion? Was that in the book?
Right. Okay. Yeah, it says it. And then she also, Emily Habeck has a master's from Vanderbilt, so like a legit in divination. So that's like a religious study. So I kind of like,
yeah,
wonder kind of where her, like what she's posing to us as readers. Like, what are you right. trying to get at this with? Is there a message here that you're sending? Is this like you want us to think about it? Like the tiny pregnant woman doesn't want to get an abortion, which she could. She could have said, yeah. you know, no, she doesn't want to have these babies. And so like where, you know, how does this tie into Lewis's transformation and where he's going to? Like, there's so many layers of this book that I don't think we got into, but I would love to hear what the author had to say on it. So
yeah, that's like that's something that I would definitely look closer at on a reread, because it yeah. is, it feels to me, thinking about it now, that it is like posing the question of, like, in terms of abortions, like whether or not you choose to get an abortion or not, they're both valid choices. You yeah. have that ability to yeah. pick which one you want, but like you will live with the consequences of either choice. Mm-hmm. And hers, like, I feel like the book, we get to see Ren moving past her grief and mm-hmm. out of her grief. And the tiny pregnant woman never gets that chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, thinking about kind of the metaphor for these changes and debilitating illnesses and everything, people saying, well, I'm just going to let God heal it, or like God will heal me. And, you know, I want people to know, like, sometimes God is giving you to me to help me, to help, let me help you. Like, sometimes that's what God's role is in all this, is he's not going to come. He's not magic. It's not magic. Like, he's not going to come down and ding and you're going to be okay. Like, right. there is a component right. of faith, and there is a component of hope in what we do. But some of that is also that you have to have faith in me to help you. And you have to have faith that I was intervened on by God as well. And I wonder kind of if maybe that's what she was thinking, is, you know, how does Lewis's story look at this? Like, because they don't talk about their religious aspect at all. There's, you know, not a lot of questions on their faith of Lewis and Ren, yeah. where their faith plays into it, if they have any faith. They're both very, I think they're both very analytical people and mm-hmm. problem solvers. Despite Lewis being their creative, he is very much an analytical thinker. So there's not really any discussion there, but I'd be curious to hear from the author kind of where that all plays into it from her part. So.
Yeah, I would love to pick her brain about this a little bit. And yes. I know in the back of the paperback, there is a conversation with Emily Habeck, where she answers some questions like, what was your inspiration? Did you think the premise would be too weird? She talks about the transformations, different things. And like, I think there are so many... this does what a good book should do, which is it opens the avenues for so many interesting conversations.
Yeah.
About like religion and love and illness and grief, just all of those things.
Yeah. Sure.
And you talked a little bit about how like Lewis and Ren are both analytical people in, mm-hmm. in ways, or logical people at least. So they do approach the world in different ways. And I think the beginning of the book hits on this, like, not super hard, but it hits on it to like make it clear to the reader that mm-hmm. they are different people who came together.
Yeah.
But they do still have some underlying similarities. Like, even from the beginning of the book, I think there are, like, they both have kind of this fantastical thinking,
right.
and like yeah. ways of looking at certain parts of the world. And then near the end of the book, we see Ren like adopt more of Lewis's traits.
Mm-hmm.
So like do I found that like there were parts of both of them that I related to. Did you also feel that way, or like, was there one of them that you felt you kind of connected to more, or saw the world in their view a little bit better?
Probably maybe a little bit of both, not like one 100% more than the other. Like, I feel like as a mother, I definitely understood Ren's story later, and with their child, and like how, you know, like my mother has chronic illnesses. I have a touch of some of those. I think about what my children will have. So knowing like her mother had a mutation and Joy's father had a mutation and now she has this child, like what does that look for? Like that really spoke to me. But then also like Lewis in his shark form, when he was with the real chatty shark, I felt like I really connected with him then. I felt like he was like, I don't want to be in this place with my thoughts, but I'm in this place with my thoughts and I'm here with this chatty Kathy and I'm literally just trying to survive. And like, I was like, yeah, no, I like could get, I could get there. Like I've been there where you're just like, I just am trying to survive and I don't know what's going on with my body and I don't know what's going on with my heart and I don't know what's going on with my mind. And like, so both of them I really identified with, but later in the book, I felt mm-hmm. like more in the beginning of the book, it was more just of us getting to know the story. Yeah, and I 100% am not thinking that that child is anybody's but Lewis. Even though she hooked up with a truck driver, I am not going there because I have a pure heart in that sense. And I love a happy ever after, even though this didn't have a happily ever after, for the most part. That was not some random hookup babies. That was Lewis's baby. So, yeah.
I also, first of all, I think I had completely forgotten about the trucker by that point. Yeah. And I was also like, this just feels like Lewis's child.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It could be because of like Lewis's influence through Ren, but it's like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I think the baby was Lewis's. I think it was.
100%. 100%.
She was theirs.
But then it totally opens up like a whole nother tract in my brain and my super smut brain takes over and I'm like, okay. So now I have to Google a shark penis and how sharks, because like the last time they were together, he was wheelchair bound. So
I am
like,
there with you.
What does a shark dick look like? Like that's instantly where my brain went, because those... Obviously, my meds are not up enough, but like that's, but I mean, that was where I went. So, yeah.
God bless her for sticking with her man, because his face got smushy and sharky first. And she was like, I'm still there. I'm still with it.
The teeth, I would have been like, okay, I love you. Stay over there. Like, shark teeth are weird to begin with, and then to like be like your person that you love and you're like, oh hi, you have shark teeth. Hard pass.
I can probably do a shark.
I wrote over a book. A shark teeth. Yeah.
I wrote a book that was part of series once that was people having animal mutations. Like they weren't mm-hmm. turning into animals, they just were born with them. And yeah. the love interest had a mouthful of shark teeth. It was a whole thing where it was like, well, we can't kiss, so
you can't do other things too, because those suckers are sharp. Like,
yeah, true. That should not get anywhere near a person.
Yeah. So yeah, I think like Ren connected with Lewis and loved him so much. You know, she made him a pool, and yeah, sharks do have two penises. April chimed in. So
we're getting signals from beyond, letting us know that sharks have two penises.
Oh my gosh. Do you like smut? I have so many recommendations for smut. I read this series. That was like Kraken sex. And it was like,
hold on. Okay.
Yeah. I was not as perturbed as I should be. I was more perturbed that I wasn't perturbed. I was like, okay. So that's kind of like, okay. And like, that didn't bother me. But like, the hockey sex book did, but the Kraken sex didn't.
Interesting.
So that's where I'm at. Okay. So anywho,
I know we're off track, but I have questions about that. Okay,
So Lewis and Ren, like their overall love story, just so beautiful. I think from when she meets him in the restaurant and he's like, she's like watching him on this bad date. Like, I loved that. It was so sweet. And, you know, she's there for him. And the scuba diving, oh my gosh, where I was like, I had to put the book down and just sit for a minute so I wouldn't lose my shit because like, so sweet. Like, she, that's how she wanted to be with him. She thought, this is going to be fine. He can go do his shark stuff and I can come in and scuba dive. But she'd only ever done it in a, you know, in a lake, in a controlled surface, not in the ocean. And it's like a completely different thing. But knowing that she had that, like the love story through all of this, I absolutely adored the love between Ren and Lewis. So cute.
Yes.
One thing I want to touch on that's not on our questions, but I just thought of is Angela's story, Ren's mother's story. And kind of that whole section of the book, when I first started, I was like, okay, why? And then when we finish, I loved those characters and I loved her whole story. And it gave me a whole new perspective on Ren. And I think you kind of asked the question, the birthday party scene in early in the book.
I want to talk about this. Oh my gosh.
Go to
so, okay. So yeah. So when I started reading Angela's section, I also had a thought of like, why are we doing this? And then very quickly I was like, hold on. I'm into it. I'm here. I'm down. I'm interested in Angela. What's going on? And then we get to the point. So near the beginning of the book, we get a birthday scene from Ren's perspective as a little girl. Where Angela, like Ren doesn't really have a lot of friends in school. Yeah. And so Angela wants to throw her a birthday party and they invite all her classmates. And like nobody shows up and they see a kid drive past in the car, but they don't stop and they don't, you know, come to the party.
Yeah.
And from little kid Ren's internalized point of view, it's very obvious that she thinks that there's something wrong with her.
Right.
That she is the reason that these kids are not coming to the party.
Yeah.
And then in Angela's point of view later, And in Ren's, because it starts to kind of like get between the two of them. But like when you find out, and I don't know, normally I'm pretty good at like predicting what's going on in books. Mm-hmm. I didn't think at that point of the book that Angela, I knew Angela had a disease, but I didn't think it was also a mutation.
100%. Yeah, totally didn't see that one until we got into her story. Yeah. Yep.
Right. So I didn't think it was a mutation. So when we find out it's a mutation, by the time they're at the birthday party, like she has already started having like the Komodo dragon scales and like all the people in Ren's class would know that Ren's mom has this is mutating. And so you realize like they're not coming because of her mom.
Yeah.
And like the way that like Ren doesn't even think about that. Like little Ren doesn't have a problem with the fact that her mom is mutating.
Yeah, because it's her mom.
That's
her norm. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And like, oh my gosh, that it made me think of so many like families I've met who like one of the parents has some kind of illness or like deformity or something like that, that their children don't give a shit. Like their children, they just love their parents.
It's just
and you
mom.
Can tell that they're good parents and they're like but like other people will treat them like garbage because of perceived stigmas around those illnesses or because you look different, so I don't know how to treat you or whatever. And it's like that scene, that was when my entire, I was already enjoying the book. That was when my entire brain did a 180 and I just sat sitting, like thinking about that moment for a long, long time of just her mom going through that and Ren growing up like that and how it explained so much about Ren's personality and how she was taking care of Lewis and just ever it was like the one thing that like slid the whole story into focus.
And I think it was so perfectly timed.
Yes.
In the arc of the novel. Like, if we had gotten that very first, like, when we first saw the story, it would have been completely different. So how she integrated that into the arc of the story was so beautiful. And you just, it, like, wove in there so perfect. You're just like, oh, this was so good. And I just, that was, like, so good. So, and I loved.
It was so good.
I love how she brought us full circle with, is it George or Henry? The man that loved her. Yeah.
George.
Like, I love how, you know, we see the funeral first and it's, you know, he says, I'm just one of your mom's old friends. But then we see like how much he cared for her, for yes. Angela through everything. Like that was really, really beautiful through there. So, yeah. What does she say? What does the mom say? There's like one line and I, oh, it's something that I was just like, oh my gosh. And of course, I don't annotate books. I have like one book I've annotated and it's the Mel Robbins one. Where she says something about like, what do you need? Do you have what you need? Or,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't remember where it's at. Oh God, I forgot the chatty shark's name was Margaret C. Finnegan.
Yeah.
And she asks to be called by her full name.
Margaret C. Finnegan. Yeah. It's all right. It's a good name. It's a strong name.
It's a good name. We do find out she turned into a shark when she was like 13, I think.
Right. So she's probably like still a mean girl. Like, oh my God, Margaret C. Finnegan. So Ren, age 8. Ugh. Oh, the one though, the one that like, I was like ugly crying, when Ren is 8 and, they get a new car and, the mom's like, you know, I want to talk to you about this. We need to have this conversation that this is going different and I'm having problems with my short-term memory. Mm-hmm. May not remember things like appointments and directions. I need you to listen very closely. And how she's kind of putting that on a little 8-year-old. But then Ren says, you know, will you remember who I am? And she said, even if it seems like I've forgotten, remember my voice and know that I do remember you and I will always know who you are. And I was like, oh, because it's taking away, you know, the change from her mom was taking away so much. And then Lewis changes too. But he'll always remember yes. her. Like, yeah. And she says to him later, like, I'll always remember you. And like, that was yeah. just so, so good. Just so yeah. good. Yes.
Yeah.
So good.
That reminds me. One of the things when I was talking earlier about, like these being metaphors for real life illnesses, but not exactly being real life illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Lewis's being like cancer is yeah. like he's alive after the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he is in a place where Ren cannot follow him
mm-hmm.
and he cannot be with the people that he loved or knew.
Yeah.
And he is essentially like an afterlife
yeah.
kind of.
Agreed. Yeah.
Cause it, you know, he talks about it feeling like, kind of a big nothingness because mm-hmm. it's the ocean.
Yeah.
But like he finds meaning in it anyway.
Yeah. With Margaret
and I just no, I thought that was really beautiful. And it was like that was the point in the book where I was like autistic brain, this does not have to be literal. This does not have to be a one-to-one metaphor for an actual illness. Like this can be It can be more fluid than that. It can be more dynamic than that.
Girl, I'm not autistic, and I thought the same damn thing. So I'm like 100%. What disease is she talking about? But yeah, no. And I think that's one of the things about this book that is so touching is it could be so many other things. It could
Yes.
be cancer. It could be, what does Michael Jackson have? Parkinson's. It could be, you know, all of those things. It could be any of these, but we don't know because we're just learning about him having this mutation. Yeah.
Yes. Michael J. Fox.
Who'd I say?
Michael Jackson.
Oh, him too. Yeah. No.
He had a different thing.
Wow. Yeah. Those are like
you're
way
fine.
Different. Thank you.
You know,
yeah.
It's okay. It's but nice. Yeah, no, I exactly what you're saying. Like and that's
can
something
I
I've struggled
just
with.
Mix up Alex P. Keaton and the King of Pop. That's awesome. That like just go ahead and take my millennial card and just shred it. So yeah.
It's all
okay.
Right. It's okay.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
But anyway, like as a writer, that's something I struggle with. Like that story I mentioned a little bit ago about the people who had animal mutations. It was like when I wrote that, I was a lot younger, and as I got older, I started asking myself, like, what am I talking about with this?
Yeah.
Because there are certain things that like don't really work when turned into a metaphor. Like like if you're writing a book about you know, witches, but witches is a metaphor for like black people and how they're persecuted. It's like, you don't have to write that as a metaphor. It's just happening right now. Like, you can just put black people in your story.
Yeah.
But I think with illnesses, it does work. Because like they do still have an illness, and she is still kind of distinguishing between different kinds of illnesses. But at the same time, like, yeah, you don't have to make it so strict a meaning.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just thought this book worked really well
and was
beautiful. And I really liked the message at the end of just like, I feel like there's so many books that or stories in general that just talk about how our generational trauma kind of fucks us up. And it's like, but there's also so many beautiful things that you get from your parents and the hardships that they've been through, and like then the hardships that you go through, you pass on to your children, but you also pass on like what you learned from those things.
100%. 100%. As a parent, I can say that 100%. Like earlier today, my kids are in Disney. With the marching band. It's a rite of passage. You know, we're Midwesterners. You get it. They rode the bus. It was a 16-hour bus ride. My youngest bus broke down, like all the things. And I kind of got pissy with myself and like in my own head because my kids have so much more than I ever had growing up. But I don't want them to have the same life I did. I want them to have more. I want them to have different. So like, everything that Ren went through with Angela and her mutation and everything, she doesn't want to give that to Joy. She wants to do so much more for it. And it is, you know, generational trauma, generational growth is such a component of this story that I don't think people initially get until you like read through it, and especially not from the description of, oh, it's a guy that turns into a shark. You know what I mean? Like there's so many layers to this. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So. And I just went and looked at the last lines of the book again. And it, like Ren and Joy are, I think, oh, they're at the beach, and Joy is like running out into the water, and Ren says, go play, be free. And Joy's just having a good time in the water, and she says, it's easy, see? And it's like, this whole book, Ren has struggled with, like, allowing herself to be free of, like, her reservations and her traumas and her fears.
Allowing
and it's
herself
like,
joy,
then,
yeah.
And allowing herself joy. And then her daughter is just like, it's almost like she and Lewis, to a degree, both like through their daughter kind of accomplished this goal of giving their daughter a better life, because she, yep, it is easy for her to, yep, to not worry.
Just play in the water and not worry about what comes next. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And I feel like that is like, I'm not a parent, but I feel like that is the goal, is to give your child a childhood.
Yeah. You don't want to raise assholes, and then you want to make sure that you're like giving them a childhood, letting them be free and letting them be little and all of those things. And yeah. So,
yes.
So what was your exactly. Goodreads / Storygraph rating on this?
So I don't, normally I don't rate a lot of books just because I don't want people to know what I think of them. And I don't like a lot of books. Ironically,
I'm gonna tell you that I think your shit is shit. So
it's like I tell April and Molly this every time I'm on. I like, there are so many books that I could talk about for a long, long time, but as an author, I have no interest in making people think that I don't like other authors.
That's fair. That's a fair.
You know what
statement.
I mean? Like, I don't want to put down other authors. If a book wasn't for me, I like, that's fine. This book, if I were to rate it, I would probably give it like a 4 or 4.5. Yep, I really liked it. I think it'll stick with me.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And it's one of those that if I see somebody at the bookstore, I'm not going to say the big name because they've pissed me off, but my little bookstore, I love Shop Beanbag Books, Delaware, Ohio. We love them. Hashtag not sponsored. but like, I would be like, oh my God, read that book, pick it up. There's so much more to it. Like, I would definitely recommend this. And I think I'm going to send this one to my sister. Cause I feel like she would really, really like it. And her and I don't agree on like any book ever. She reads Stephen King and I read fantasy. So yeah. So.
Yeah. I would definitely like, there are certain people that I think would like this book, but because of things that have happened in their lives and like the people that they've lost from cancer and other illnesses, like be like, okay, look, this is a good book, but just gird yourself.
Be in the right mindset to read it. Yep.
Be in the right mindset. It's going to be rough. Like, there is an uplifting ending.
Yes.
But you do got to go through all the rough stuff to get there.
You got to push through. What else is going after we've had this lovely conversation? I'm so glad that we were able to share this conversation.
Me too.
But what else is going on now? I can kind of fangirl and find out what else is going on in your world, because I did restock your Instagram lately, and I do feel like you should be having a new book coming out anytime soon. So
yes, so I was finally able to announce it. I have a companion novel to Eliza and Her Monsters coming out at some point in the future. It's called, currently it's called Evie and Her Nightmares.
Love it.
And it is, set a little bit after Eliza, probably like the same amount of years realistically as like when Eliza came out and then now when this is coming out. And it is about a girl who, loses her best friend and, gets lost in her grief and tries to escape it by playing an online RPG. And you've got all this stuff from Eliza. You've got snippets from another fictional book within a book and the game. There's a love story in there. There's a lot of talk about depression.
So is it ready for pre-order? Can I add to cart and pre-order?
It is not yet, unfortunately. We are still waiting. That's the only thing. Like, I haven't talked more about it because there's no Goodreads link yet and there's no pre-order links. And so it's like I talk about it and then it's like there's nothing there. So the minute it is, I will post it on Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, Threads, wherever you can find me. I'm at Chessie Zappia on all of them. I also have my Substack, where I do my newsletter. You can find that on my website, which is francescazappia.com. Thank you, April, for reminding me about my newsletter that I forget about. I do post on there though. And they'll put it
in the tiddly news, like they do all the links.
They will put it in the notes. Anyway, yeah, I recently ranted on my Substack about my edit letter for the book I just wrote, and how much editing I have to do. So anyway, yeah, that's where you can find me and find all my stuff.
Awesome. And then I think you are coming back with just April and Molly later in the year. I don't know exactly when.
I think in October.
Oh, fun. We will
be doing hopefully another spooky book.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard no for me. I think I've read one of the books.
not a spooky book reader?
No. It's kind of weird the how I am in the mix of all this, because I am 100% down for April's Smut Girl. We do Smut Girl Summer. We do Warm Winter Bitches.
Smut Girl
we do
Summer.
All the romance. But then some of the weird shit that Molly recommends, I'm like, oh my God, it was so good. And April's like, that was just insane. So I'm not the meat. And then there's some stuff that I'm like, I mean, obviously my Kraken sex story, I'm over there like completely by myself, where both of them are like, we're not touching that, you weirdo. So, you know, it's a good time.
Real quick, and we could talk about this later, but I think we have something that would interest all of us, which is the Regé Jean Page Count of Monte Cristo that he's making. That is for everyone here, I believe.
You had me at Regé Jean Page. Like,
I know, I know. Crazy.
There, do you know what the Brit Box is?
Yes, the British TV subscription.
The whole, like, him reading a kid's story a couple weeks ago, I was like, like, I may replay that since I'm home alone. My husband's on duty and my kids are on. I may put that on my TV in my bedroom tonight and just like, re-listen and have him read me story time. Because, yes.
The man's good.
He's so good on so many levels. So, all right. Well, if I don't have anything else, I'm super wonderful sharing time with you today. I'm super excited that
yes,
we got
you too.
All right. Thank well, if you, you don't
thank you
see
talking
anything
to me.
Else, besties, have a wonderful day and we'll see you later. Yes. Bye.
Bye. What a good job they did.
Oh my gosh, that was so fun to watch.
Thank you.
I colored a whole page. Do you want to see?
Yes. I was coloring in my journal too.
Beautiful.
So next week we're reading this toddler. Book, The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. I don't know. It's got a K. Colleen Bradley.
K Bradley.
We'll go with K Bradley. Bradley, The Ministry of Time. And this book is blurbed by Emily Henry.
It's Obama's favorite book from last year.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean anything. He likes a lot of things we don't like.
Yep.
Like surfing. Uh-huh. I don't want to surf.
Uh-huh. Yep. Those are all good points, Molly. And we'll talk more about them next week. And that's it.
We'll see you guys next time. Thank you, besties.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest hosts, Nurse Katie and Francesca Zappia. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's book was Shark Heart by Emily Habeck. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.